Good morning, everyone. Welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space, and we are here again on a Sunday morning here in London time, just after 9 o'clock, for our weekly Turning Towards Life conversation. And before we do the thing that we always do, which is to read a source, which is this week chosen by Lizzie, and then launch ourselves into a who knows what it's going to be conversation, I just want to say welcome to everyone. Welcome to those of you who've been with us for many months. Welcome to those of you who are listening for the first time. Welcome to those of you who just got introduced to this by a friend and who are wondering what it's all about. Welcome to those of you who are listening on your earphones whilst you walk or drive or sit or lie in bed or whatever it is that you do. And to those of you who are watching on YouTube later, and so those of you who are here live, some of you who we know get up at crazy hours to listen to us, or are up very late, or maybe you're just on a similar time zone to us. So welcome to all of you for that. And Lizzie, thank you for bringing Parker Palmer, who actually, I just want to say to everyone who's with us, you can always find our sources if you haven't found this out yet. Come and ask to join our Turning Towards Life group on Facebook if you wish, and you'll see the source a few days before, and you can always come back and read the sources afterwards, and they're also all on our little micro website, turningtowards.life. And this is from a writer whose work I love and admire so much, Lizzie, and from a book that I think is an astonishing book, so thank you for bringing it our way.
So yeah, this is there's a chapter in this book called The Courage to Teach. Hello, everybody. It's really wonderful to be here. And this book, The Courage to Teach, I think for both Justin and I has been a game changer. It's a readable, againable, multiple times a book. And I'm bringing this because of, I think, an ongoing theme for me and for many, many people is this kind of dividedness that our world often is a perfect storm for. Like, there's things that we have to do where we have to put parts of ourselves away. And I feel like it's a very meaningful thing to me to be coherent and, I don't know what the word is, but like to have integrity and be whoever I really am, wherever I am, and to look at ways that the world twists me about, and also the people who twist me about, and allow me to either be myself or I can feel this pull to be something else. And so to be undivided and to be turning up wherever I am, doing whatever I'm doing, with a kind of thread of self that's big enough that I can recognize myself, my true self, wherever I am, feels very important to me. And the way Parker Palmer writes about this is so moving. And so I wanted to bring this to all of us to wander into the conversation. So here we are. This is a few paragraphs of the chapter Divided No More in Parker Palmer's book, The Courage to Teach. So here we go. Many of us know from personal experience how it feels to live a divided life. Inwardly, we experience one imperative for our lives, but outwardly, we respond to quite another. This is the human condition, of course. Our inner and outer worlds are never in perfect harmony, but there are extremes of dividedness that become intolerable when one can no longer live without bringing one's actions into harmony with one's inner life. When that happens inside of one person, then another, and another, and another, in relation to a significant social issue, a movement may be conceived. The condition to be overcome by living divided no more has a specific etiology. We inhabit institutional settings, including school and work and civic society, because they harbour opportunities that we value. But the claims those institutions make on us are sometimes at odds with our hearts. For example, the demand for loyalty to the corporation, right or wrong, versus the inward imperative to speak truth. That tension can be creative up to a point. It becomes pathological when the heart becomes a wholly owned subsidiary of the organization, when we internalize organizational logic and allow it to overwhelm the logic of our own lives. To live divided no more is to find a new center for one's life, a center external to the institution and its demands. This does not mean leaving the institution physically. One may stay at one's post, but it does mean taking one's spiritual leave. One finds solid ground on which to stand outside the institution, the ground of one's own being. And from that ground is better able to resist the deformations that occur when organizational values become the landscape of one's inner life.
Thank you, Lizzie. So I'm going to read. Part of this. We inhabit institutional settings, including school and work and civic society, because they harbour opportunities that we value. But the claims those institutions make on us are sometimes at odds with our hearts. For example, the demand for loyalty to the corporation, right or wrong, versus the inward imperative to speak truth. That tension can be creative up to a point. It becomes pathological when the heart becomes a wholly owned subsidiary of the organization, when we internalize organizational logic and allow it to overwhelm the logic of our own lives. To live divided no more is to find a new center for one's life, a center external to the institution and its demands. This doesn't mean not leaving the institution physically. One may stay at one's post, but it does mean taking one's spiritual leave. One finds solid ground on which to stand outside the institution, the ground of one's own being. And from that ground is better able to resist the deformations that occur when organizational values become the landscape of one's inner life.
So as you're reading, Justin, the thing that really landed for me then was how this all begins with such goodness. You know, we are wide-eyed and innocently wandering into things we value. And somehow along the way, our eyes become even wider and we see more. And we experience the twisting and the... I don't know, for me it occurs like a kind of shuddering in my heart of like, oh, can that be really what's happening here? That's not what I would do. That's not how I would be or how I would value something, but it's how this bigger being is doing something, and I have to ask myself whether I am okay with that or not, and whether I'm willing to speak truth, as Parker Palmer is saying, in the face of what has served me. And it feels like a kind of individuation that has to happen, like a questioning of like, well, who am I? In a way, it's a big gift, which is to be in contrast with one's own values is a kind of light bulb moment to know what one's values are. And so to be in this contrast and come out with a thought that is mine, rather than a towing the line or just, well, this is what's happening, so I'm going to go along with it, seems like the kind of the underpinning process that keeps unfolding for me is, well, what do I think? And weirdly, that's a heart thing. You know, what's my truth on this? So something happens and it jars and I think, oh, hold on a second, that doesn't feel right. So what is right? What does feel like the thing to be done? And I think to now, and it continues to be like this, I keep coming up against the contrast and then having to be in conversation with myself as to what is to be done, what's the response that feels like it has integrity for me here. And lots of times it's speaking up. Many times I don't feel like I have the strength to speak up, or it's not the right time or whatever. But I feel like Parker Palmer's inviting us into the deeper calling of our hearts and lives. That is what gets uncovered by being in these organizations, institutions that are rubbing against and going in a different direction to what we really feel is our truth. And I'm so grateful for it, because it's an articulation of something I think that happens on the inside of us a lot. And yet we find it really hard to have language for, because it feels like it's too risky, there's too much at stake. I couldn't possibly speak up, because there's a powerful force at play here, which is an organization that pays my wages, keeps my family safe, or whatever the thing is. Or it's an institution or a societal something. And to question it all feels really vulnerable, but it's also really, really important for one's own life that we live every single day. And it's ours. It's not someone else's. It's ours.
I love that, Lizzie, that Parker Palmer is not, and of course he's not, because he's too, what I'm about to say, he's too deep and sophisticated a writer and a person to do this, but he's not setting up some kind of polarization, like the call of the heart is just to smash the institution and to everybody go their own individualistic way. It's not a call to that kind of narcissistic temptation that we have, which is I'll just try to have the world my way. He recognizes, and when you sent this to me a couple of days ago, Lizzie, and every time I read it, I've really been touched by that, where he says, I felt it again when you were reading. We inhabit collective settings because they harbor something that we value. It matters to us that we can do things together. Organizations matter because they allow us to collectively do things that we couldn't do alone. Communities matter because of the kind of relationships they build us into and the way that we can belong in them. Societies matter. So it can't be that, I think it's very easy to set up, sort of imagine a dynamic where they are all sort of oppressors and I am the poor, squished individual. And that would be to really deeply misunderstand what's going on. And at the same time, what you said about being able to live a life that's ours, I think feels to me like that matters. We get a brief chance to be here, and holding together the I am part of something that is everybody and I am particular. There's just one encounter with this being business of living that is Lizzie shaped or Justin shaped or anyone else shaped. It's the holding of those two together. And elsewhere in Parker Palmer's work, he talks about the sort of the in and out of this, the going in and coming out, and the going in and coming out that keeps us connected with what we're in the middle of. And the way I was feeling into it whilst you were speaking, Lizzie, is to use this language of parts that we've used, that it seems to me that the way to honour our participation in a world where we can contribute and take responsibility is to see that there is a part of us that can know how to do that, that can know how to set our wishes aside in order to hold on to a job, or in order to belong, or in order to make sense to people, or in order to stay in a relationship. But let's not also forget the part of us that longs for a particular expression that we can feel that has integrity and truthfulness to it. And as you were talking, I was also really, Lizzie, feeling into this time right now when we're having this conversation is a time when so much in the world feels very polarized between different groups of people, all of whom it's very easy to be in a group and feel like we're the right ones and they're the wrong ones. We understand the world and you don't. We're principled and you're not. We have integrity and you don't. All of those kind of things. And I could feel how this finding the truth of our own hearts and having a part of us that stands outside the collective and can have a different stand and can speak up, how important that is in this situation, because it's very easy for us. The way this piece is written by Parker Palmer points out how we can get, he says, we internalize organizational logic and we can allow it to overwhelm the logic of our own lives. It makes it sound like that will only happen when we're feeling despairing or something, like I hate this place and it's overwhelming me. But sometimes we get overwhelmed by the organizational logic. Our own lives get overwhelmed because we've got so convinced of the rightness of the organization or the collective we're in, how wonderful it is, how beautiful it is, how perfect it is. And we could really easily confuse that with this project of integrity and following our own hearts, but it could still be as much an abandonment of ourselves as could be the times when we can feel that something's off and something's wrong and I shouldn't be here. And so the work of cultivating a heart, solid ground that is outside of the institution, that's the ground of our own being, I think then becomes really not just about our own lives. It is about our own lives necessarily, but it's also about how we hold ourselves in a world that's got a much bigger view than who I'm attracted to be with now or where I feel I belong now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really glad that that's here. Dissolves the this is just another version of sort of self-interested self-actualization or something, which any of us can get into. Something much bigger and deeper going on here, I think.
Mm-hmm. As you're speaking as well, Justin, it strikes me that things only have ever shifted in depth or sophistication because people have told the truth about things. Like, I think this is a call to telling the truth, and we can tell the truth to ourselves and leave something. We can also tell the truth to ourselves and stay somewhere. It's not about a decision in a way. It's about how do I feel like I get to the end of the day and not feel like I've lied to myself. That's how I feel about it. And I really trust that each of us finds ourselves where we are for very, very good reason. Like, wherever I am, my voice matters. And what I think and what I feel, what I can see, has a place in whatever system I find myself in, because the system partly is me. And I love systems that let each part of itself have a voice. That feels like a really healthy way to be in the world, is to allow a whole system to have whatever it has to say it. And I think often that's what happens, is that the setup says you can say things, but you can't. But every you is a whole person. They might have a different level of power in the system, a different level of influence, magnitude of influence, but every voice has a place in any system. And that feels the call to me, is that somehow the way that power works in the world silences so many of us. And often our silence is not authentic. You know, it's there's something that wants to be said by everyone. And what kind of systems might we build in the world where, when part of the system says something, we turn towards it rather than dismiss it or pretend it's not happening or just bat it away somehow. And I wonder about a world where we have organizations that allow people to be undivided because they get to tell the truth inside of them. And that somehow the organizational values don't trump the individual's values. And by being here, I'm not asking you to put aside your own values. I'm saying all of them are welcome here. Like, what if we could have institutions like that, organizations like that, that allow us to be here and don't, and of course, benefit from the values of community and togetherness and doing things in multiples of human groups, but which also allows us to hold our own. That feels like the kind of orientation of the kind of world Parker Palmer's painting, is that all of you is welcome. The system has a voice in all different parts. And just as human beings, we are a system and we have different parts that say different things at different times. And what if we turn towards all of them and let them all be here and still keep putting one foot in front of the other? That feels like the deeper invitation here. And I really appreciate the languageness of dividedness, because somehow being divided to me means not turning towards the parts. It means putting something away or hiding something or cutting something off. And so I experience this passage as a big welcoming back of the parts and an invitation for systems to also practice in that way too. And if we're ever in a position of power in our organizations, what might it be to have an orientation of undividedness in how we manage things, in how we hold people, in how we hold structures, in how we communicate, in how we change things, and how we play our part in the evolution, in the deepening, in the shifting that's always happening inside organizations as well. And like, I've never encountered organizational life where everything's the same all the time. It just seems to be lots of change all the time. And I think particularly now in the world, I think everything is changing. And so I think in some ways, the more frightened I am, the more important this becomes, rather than the more frightened I am, the less important this becomes, which I could go that way too, which is, well, I'm just really scared. I'm just going to try and keep everything the same and not rock the boat. And yet it seems like the world is asking for something much deeper from us now, which is to tell the truth and to be honest with ourselves and one another and let anything we're a part of have all the voices it wants to have and for us to respond.
I think this way you're talking, Lizzie, about where you've extended this, not just from our own individual longings, but into our relationships with one another and into the collective structures that we make, is so important. And it's really important now, and it's really important always. When you said the time to find the part that has something else to say is when we're most afraid, because I immediately started thinking about all the times that social movements and organizations and have grown up in the world that have done terrible harm because people inside them were too afraid to say anything other than what was happening. But it also struck me that the implication, the invitation in what you were saying, was that for any of us who find ourselves in any position of power ever, which there are billions of people on the planet who never do, but there are also billions of people who do. We find ourselves, even if we have very little power in one place, we find that we have some influence in a family system or in a friendship or in a community, or maybe we do have hierarchical power in an organization somewhere, or, you know, there are lots and lots and lots of ways in which we humans influence one another, that it becomes a really, really big responsibility for us to be people who can allow the different parts of others to show. You know, I won't push you away, Lizzie, because you don't, there's a part of you that says something that's really at odds with what I feel, or I feel threatened by what you're saying, or confused, or maybe I feel like your very speaking robs me of my legitimacy or something. So can we create spaces for the kinds of conversation where parts can different parts can show up and we can welcome them and stay with them without trying to squish them, whatever. And I thought that that also meant two things as you were speaking. So one is slowing down. I think a big part of what makes this hard is so many of us in such a hurry all the time. We feel like, well, there's no time for me to hear the conflicts in you or the conflicts in me, because that will derail us from the next thing that has to be done this second. So I think we really have to have places where we're, you know, not always, but we have to have places where we're unhurried. And we can listen to one another over long enough periods to allow this to surface. But the other part of it that is directly implied by what you said and really in Parker Palmer's is that it really helps us to learn to be the kind of people who can tolerate difference in ourselves, which is exactly Parker Palmer's point. Can I find the part of myself that does not belong here, that is outside of this, even though I want to be inside this? Can I find the part of me that will say something different? Can I find the part of me that will love in a new way? Can I find the part of me that will invite in a new way, take a stand? So the work of learning to turn towards and include the parts of ourselves is not only for our own lives, but you know, the uniqueness of Lizzie or Justin or whoever can get expressed. But I think it's also the same thing that allows me to stay with you when you're different in lots of ways, and allows us to lead in places where we get to have, you know, to exercise power is probably a better way of saying it. When we have any kind of power, to exercise it in a way that can be a welcome to the articulation of, the expression of, the feeling of difference. If we're not doing that with ourselves in some way, we perpetuate our own dividedness. We force it, our own dividedness, onto other people. Because I'm divided, you must be divided. You have to believe everything that this organization says because I have to do that. And there's no place in me that I can find that allows for difference in. So the personal and the collective are not at all separate here.
That's what I get really excited about, Justin. When you're talking, I can feel this hope bubbling. Because, you know, when you hear this kind of analogy that the world is a projection of what's going on here, I often find it really kind of confusing and, well, yes, but really, you know. But what I find in what you're saying is like a really concrete thing that I can hold on to, which is that my relationship to my own capacity to turn towards parts of myself that I don't like, or that I don't feel welcome, or that have been cut off, or whatever, really does determine my capacity to do that in the world with other people too. So I can find then the link between myself and the world, which feels really connecting and hopeful. And I can see that I have power in my system, which is, even if I have no positional power, I still have this positional power, which is I can turn towards myself in the way that I want to, that I intend. So I can slow down and I can allow myself dissent from my own life and my own decisions that I've made and my own. I don't have to go, yes, it's okay, you did everything right. I can say, you really messed that up. You know, if I choose to create enough space and enough slowness, I can let that be there and it's okay, without knocking my whole life out of the way. I can just say it's a part that feels like I shouldn't have done that. And of course, there's loads of other things that are in contrast to that, but I'm okay to say I didn't like that I made that choice. I am ashamed of this part of me that thought this about that person. I have very strong views about this. Whatever it is, I can allow that to be there and just see it, just like have it in my hands rather than it be some kind of buried something. And then if I'm practicing that with myself and I'm in some kind of structure or relationship or whatever it is, or a family, I'm thinking of parenting particularly as well, I can allow things to be there that really feel outside of my view, outside of my little box of acceptability that I have. and take a breath and welcome them as a part. And then it feels also not so scary. It's like I'm like right-sizing things. Like I can just say something's a part means that I don't have to wholesale get freaked out by it or think that it's the be-all and end-all and narrow myself into a place of fearfulness. I can say hello and wonder and let it be here and see if it takes over. Because mostly, actually, when I turn towards parts of myself and other people and systems, they really are a part. They're not the whole thing, even though it feels like it because of all of our emotions and reactivity and everything. So I'm suddenly feeling very hopeful about where to begin. We can just begin with ourselves, and that will extend itself into whatever the world is that we find ourselves in, whatever situational dynamics we find ourselves in. And especially when we do have power as a parent or a leader or a manager or somebody who influences and has, holds power in any system. So I'm feeling really kind of, I'm feeling that connection that you spoke of, that we're not separate. And in that not separateness, we can feel powerful, like we have some agency. We're not just victims of having stuff smacked on us as if we have to just take it for our inner world, like have the outer be the inner or something, but that we can encounter the world in a really different way.
The phrase that keeps coming to mind for me whilst you're speaking, Lizzie, is cultivating a many-chambered heart.
Yeah.
And it seems like a wonderful thing that the work of our cultivating a many-chambered heart is precisely what helps us to live divided no more.
Mm.
It's hard to see that one of the reasons we get divided is in fact because we're not including enough of the different aspects of ourselves to allow us. We've allowed ourselves to identify with only some part of ourselves, and we're only allowing ourselves to identify with some part of other people, the part that doesn't complain or doesn't argue back or doesn't get joyful or doesn't express emotion or whatever it is. So we have to know our own multiplicity in order to know and welcome the multiplicity of others. And to be undivided is not to be only one thing. It's actually to be many simultaneously.
Yes.
That's when we are undivided and we have a chance of helping other people to be undivided as well.
Mm. That's very beautiful, Justin. Many chambered hearts.
Mm.
My goodness. Well, thank you all for being with us today. And thank you, Justin, for this. As ever, I feel like we're an unfolding in this conversation that we're in together week after week. And it just feels like more petals, more flowering happens every time. I'm really grateful. And thank you all for being here and for being in the conversation and for your also many chambered hearts joining us. It's very beautiful. And we will be back next week at around 9 o'clock on Sunday here on Facebook and all the other places as well. And thank you so much for being here. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Lizzie. Thank you, everyone. See you then. Bye.